This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later this week, President Bush is expected to sign a bill to establish a National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. The creation of this new Smithsonian Museum is largely due to the persistent efforts of Congressman John Lewis of Georgia. He'll join us in just a moment. But the legislative victory leaves some controversial questions unanswered. Two are pragmatic. Where should the museum be located, and what should it display? But there are also a greater point of contention. Should there be a separate museum for African American history at all? Some fear such a museum will segregate African American history into an isolated building that most Americans may ignore. Others wonder if this museum will prompt Latinos, Asians, women, and other groups to demand equal treatment. Later in the program, T.R. Reid of The Washington Post will join us from the trial of North Dakota Congressman William Janklow, who's presenting an unusual defense against vehicular homicide, low blood sugar. But first, the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Should we have one? And if so, what would you put in it? Slavery, the Civil War, Reconstruction, the Harlem Renaissance, the Civil Rights Movement. What else do you want to see? Is it important that it be on the National Mall itself? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Deborah Willis. Deborah Willis is professor of photography and imaging at New York University and the author of Reflections in Black, History of Black Photography. And she's with us from her home in New York. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello.
Very good of you to be with us today. How do you react to the after so many years of controversy and struggle that this National Museum is looks like it's going to happen?
I'm really enthusiastic about it. I'm hopeful that we can now begin to put together collections and exhibitions about this wonderful history.
As somebody who's used to creating exhibits yourself, what museums do you think might be a good model or an example of telling stories visually?
Oh, goodness. That's a hard one. But I just in looking at American history here at the Smithsonian, I think that's a story in itself in terms of how to tell a story through material culture as well as through fine art. So I think that's an ideal model in terms of that type of museum.
What should be in it, do you think?
Well, I think it should also. It definitely should have three-dimensional objects such as installations with homes, how people lived in the 19th and 20th century. Definitely photographs depicting life, prints and drawings, fine art, sculpture, as well as installation of video and electronic imagery, just to tell the story that through voice and through oral history.
Do you see any contradiction, potential rift between having a museum that's both a cultural museum and a history museum at the same time?
No, I don't, because I teach, and I'm really interested in both the notion of culture and the notion of history and how art is intertwined between the two. And I think that visually, as a photo historian, I'm able to tell stories through objects. And I think that's something that's really important for viewers who attend museums. How do we tell the story? It's not a book on the wall, but it's mainly through objects.
We wanted to thank you very much for being with us today, Deborah Willis.
Okay.
Appreciate
thank
your
you.
Time. Deborah Willis is a professor of photography and imaging at New York University and the author of Reflections in Black, A History of Black Photography. She joined us from her home in New York. And joining us now is Congressman John Lewis of Georgia. He's been leading the initiative to establish the National African American Museum since 1988. He joins us now from Atlanta. And, Congressman, it's good of you to be with us today.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted and very pleased to be with you.
Congratulations, first of all.
Well, thank you. It was a long and hard struggle, but we made it to this point. And I'm gratified with the support that we received on both sides of the aisle in the Congress.
After so many attempts, why do you think it's happening now?
People came together on the Democratic side as well as the Republican side. We had wonderful, wonderful support from the leadership of the House and the leadership of the Senate. And we had the support of the administration, President Bush, who said if we passed the bill that he would sign it. And in our conversation with him, he became very, very supportive of the idea of an African-American museum.
Now, you have presented this as an African-American museum on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Is that location important to you?
Well, it is important to have it on the Mall or as near the Mall as possible. Some people are saying that we don't have any additional space on the Mall. The important thing is to put it in a area that is accessible in the community or the other major landmarks and museums, that it won't be on some path hidden away someplace. Because it's not just the history of African-American. We want to tell the story of African-American because it's part of American history.
Can you take a call with us, Congressman?
I will. I'd be delighted to.
Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And Wanda joins us on the line from Washington, D.C.
Hi.
Hi, Wanda.
Everyone. I'm addressing the woman who was in the short teaser
yes.
before the program started, who says that, you know, we're all Americans. And it's interesting because metaphorically, the idea that there's no space on the Mall applies exactly to our history and even our lives today, that there is no space for anything other than, or for anyone other than Caucasian Americans. And African Americans and other people in this country have incredibly full and dynamic lives that have contributed to this country. And also, some of the things that are really important is African-American had economic lives, political lives, lives that came out of slavery, and all of this created a culture that has a very much historical base. I also want to point out in terms of the women who were speaking about installations,
mm-hmm.
I think it would be really important to have installations that show, for instance, a southern town in which you had African Americans who were carpenters, who were smithies, who were all kinds of things. But these are people who were wound up being put out of business, threatened, some hanged, because white people didn't like the competition. I think it'd be important to have an installation of the Congress during Reconstruction, in which we see African Americans who are again Congress people, and then we see how white people handled that. You know, the rise of the Ku Klux Klan. I think it's important to show how African Americans independently, you know, overcame these kinds of things and the people who succumbed to it. At the Martin Luther King Library, I saw there was a news clipping from the 1940s. When African-American soldiers were in the Army. It,
mm-hmm.
I guess it had to do with the pilots. But it also showed a piece in which two girls, this was a Southern paper, were on their way from work when two white men in a car raped them, just grabbed them and raped them, and said that they had stopped them for, like, loitering.
Congressman Lewis, I assume that those are many of the reasons you wanted to establish this museum.
You're so right, because we wanted all Americans to know of the history and the contribution and also the struggle. I don't think this museum is going to try to hide anything or skip over anything. It is my belief that under the Smithsonian and with the involvement of so many people, we're going to have a world-class museum that all Americans would be very proud of.
It's not going to, Wanda, by the way, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Hello?
Yes?
There's just something else I'd like to add. For the woman, again, in your teaser.
Yes.
As
Professor Swain from Vanderbilt University.
Right. Yes. She needs to understand that she's living a veiled life if she truly believes that since we are all Americans, and we are, that all of us count in the white American world. It just simply isn't true yet.
Thank you very much.
Our history.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, Wanda. Congressman Lewis, the museum is the initial funding, $17 million, has been approved. It's a long way from being fully funded, though, isn't it?
Oh, yes. We still have a great distance to go. We must raise half of more than $300 million. Must come from the American people, come from the private sector, and then the other half will come from the federal government. But I am convinced that we're going to be able to get the appropriation from the Congress and raise the other half of the money from the American people.
John Lewis, again, congratulations, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Well, thank you very much.
John Lewis, a congressman from Georgia, he joined us from Atlanta. And joining us now is Claudine Brown, director of the Arts and Culture Program at the Nathan Cummings Foundation in New York. She also served as the vice chairperson of the Presidential Commission for the National Museum of African American History and Culture, and she joins us from her office in New York City. And good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be here.
As somebody who's been involved with this project a long time, and perhaps as long almost as Congressman Lewis, I'm sure you're familiar with all of these arguments that have been put forward.
I am. I've heard most of them many times.
And how do you respond to those who, like Wanda, our caller earlier, says there needs to be a separate museum? And, of course, there are people on the other side who worry that this is another form of segregation.
I think that there needs to be a separate museum just like there are black studies classes. Sometimes if individuals focus on their own history and culture, they're able to uncover issues that might not have been on the table before. And that does not excuse other institutions from being more expansive, but it can be catalytic.
And if, on the other hand, shouldn't we ensure that African-American history is included in all of those other museums?
That's exactly, I think, the position that I'm taking. I think that sometimes if we take the initiative and do our own research, it then provides a venue for other institutions to begin to look at some of the same issues. If you look at the history of the African-American museum movement, many artists who first appeared in African-American museums are now artists who appear regularly in other museums around the country.
What do you think should be in such a museum? Again, you have a museum of history and culture.
This is a museum that I think is going to be created at a wonderful time in history because it can indeed show both art and historical material. But one of the reasons why I think that this is a great moment is because we're living in a digitized age. And one of the issues that arose when we worked on the program plan for this museum is the possibility of having a digital collection that would include popular film, documentaries, news footage, but it would include moving images of history as well as artifacts, which would be a central part of how this museum interprets both history and culture. We also recognize that most of the other African-American museums in this country don't have digital collections and could benefit from a larger institution collecting this material and making it available to other institutions. But we believe that this museum, over a long course of time, will have to deal with the breadth and depth of the African-American experience.
And, of course, the digital storage methods available to you mean you can actually put a lot more in there than you could have just a couple of years ago.
Absolutely.
Okay. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll take more of your calls about the creation of the new National Museum of African-American History and Culture. What would you put into it, and what do you think it should be like? What history do you want to see? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the program, we'll be talking about the trial of Congressman Bill Janklow. Earlier, I misspoke. He is from South Dakota, not North Dakota. I apologize for the error. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the establishment of a National Museum for African American History and Culture here in Washington, D.C. Our guest is Claudine Brown, who served as the vice chairperson of the Presidential Commission for the National Museum. And, of course, you're invited to join our discussion. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And why don't we get some listeners involved? Vincent joins us on the line from Gainesville, Florida.
Yes, how's it going? I just wanted to comment, first of all, on the idea of just a museum devoted strictly to African-American history. I think that that's important in the fact that there's a long history with, from the beginning of time, of slavery to civil rights movement, that needs to have a museum of its own. I mean, there's a lot of history in that having something of, you know, other cultures and trying to be, you know, politically correct might not serve the purpose that, you know, this museum would. I think the King Center is something great that was started that, isn't looked at as big because of, you know, being in Atlanta and not as widely publicized, but something in Washington like this is really great for, you know, for the nation to have something like this.
Yeah, Claudine Brown, the designation as a national museum is very important, isn't it?
It's absolutely important, and we see ourselves working with places like the King Center and other museums around the country to make sure that stories that have not been told in the past not only get told, but have venues in many cities around the nation and, in fact, venues internationally.
Hmm. Vincent, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Okay, bye-bye. We have an email from Kathy Zander in Meridian, Idaho, who writes, this sounds like a good idea to me. I hope I get to see it someday. Could you tell me the status of the Museum of the American Indian, and would this be comparable?
The Museum of the American Indian is actually under construction, and if you were to go to the mall, it's pretty close to being completed. I think that there are a lot of similarities, not unlike that museum. We see this as an institution that will tell the national story, but also from the point of view of local stories. One of the issues that came out when we did town meetings around the nation was that people were interested in hearing about the extraordinary acts of ordinary people. And we see this as a museum that will be able to do that. So we may focus on a historical moment in history, but then we will go to local institutions to see who the leaders and path breakers were in their communities and bring those stories to the nation's capital.
Let's go now to Jeff, and Jeff's with us from Norwell, Massachusetts.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Well, I think the idea of this museum is very, very exciting. But I'm wondering, how do you make sure a museum like this of such importance that recognizes such an integral part of the American community and experience, how do you make sure that all communities are integrated into this experience? You establish a museum like this, maybe some people might feel it's not for me. How do you reach out to those communities who might feel a little bit isolated or segregated from this sort of museum experience?
Well, one of the reasons why we thought it was important for this museum to be on or very near the mall is because international and national visitors of all ethnicities come to the mall museums to learn about American culture. And so we really felt that accessibility was a big issue. But the second thing is that most museums that are being created today are also looking at how to have international impact. And so you do that not just through publications and documentary films, but also through having a good online institution so that if children are doing homework, they can come to your museum's website. Or if people are going to visit and want to know something about an institution before they come, they can get high-quality information even prior to coming to a cultural institution. And they can get that information if they never come. So museums, virtual museums, can belong to everyone.
Mm-hmm. But what about with regard to, it sounds like you're talking about the international community. I'm talking about people that live in the United States that, that don't always recognize the Afro-American experience as a part of being American history and American culture. And how do you make sure that those people, you know, come to the table and are part of this experience as well?
Again, the point that I was trying to make is that the mall is a place that attracts those visitors, both American citizens as well as others. So accessibility in terms of where the museum is located, I think, makes a big difference. But the museum itself is not going to be designed just for African Americans, and I think not unlike the King Center. You know, people who are interested in the American experience will come. There are in excess of 200 other African-American museums in this country, and they have some experience with generating audiences that are diverse.
Well, it sounds very exciting, and I look forward to seeing it built and visiting it someday.
We hope that you will come.
Jeff,
thanks
for the call. An email from Mark McClintock in Colorado Springs, Colorado, addressing the issue of perhaps if this museum is established, other groups may want museums of their own. If other political minority groups want their own museums, he writes, more power to them. What is the fear? What's the downside of more celebration and more exposition on all groups of people?
I actually don't see a downside. I think that we live in a nation where new immigrants are coming into our country on a regular basis. And if we are to live in harmony and peace and understand the contributions that each group brings to this nation, we need venues for helping us to understand them better. So as long as we are open to learn and open to understand what our collective responsibilities and roles are, I think we're in good shape.
Let's go now to Ruby, who's on the line with us from Hillsburg, California.
Yes, I kind of see an approach at being very selective. What I'm getting at is I think that we're all Americans, and even the people coming here are applying to be Americans. And I hate to see our country start having a segregation and segregating out monuments and things like that.
Don't you think that, segregation is a pretty long-standing practice in this country?
I know, but we're just kind of inviting more of it. Like the other person said that was on the radio just a moment ago, because I'm on the radio. I mean, on the telephone now, and then I had to switch from my radio.
Oh, I see. Okay. Claudine?
So you hear a lot about the fact that, in other words, I think that our history goes back, and we made mistakes in our history. And it's pretty obvious. And like somebody said, there are about 7 different private African-American monuments. And then we also have Native Americans. And we also have Australians. We also have South Americans.
With all due respect to the Australians, their contribution to American history has not been as significant as that as African-American.
No, I just brought that up as an example of being international.
Oh, I see. Okay.
In other words, we have to think about the fact that the United States of America is a combination of all different people. And I don't want to see this country segregating down to national monuments of one particular race, creed, sexual orientation, and war.
Okay, Claudine Brown?
I'm not going to respond to the issue of monuments because I haven't done research and don't know a lot about it, but having worked in museums for almost 3 decades, my answer is that when you work in what is called a mainstream museum, there is a culture that already exists and that resources are always limited. And one of the things that we found is there are some mainstream museums that have collected African-American art, but if the hierarchy that's already established in your institution is that someone else's art is more precious and more important, then that work may not end up on the walls. Sometimes it may not be conserved. If there's an ability to collect new materials, those materials from the African-American or Native American or Latino community may not even be collected in an institution with limited resources. And so one of the reasons why I am an advocate for this and other similar institutions is that sometimes a group of individuals who have a strong commitment to a body of work, and it could be African-American art, but it could be French Impressionistic art, it could be African-American history or it could be Latino history, need to focus in and do the best job that they can do. And those institutions will lend those works to other institutions, but at least the works will be preserved. For every day that goes by and a story is not captured or an object is not collected, the story gets lost. And when institutions have a culture where they have already privileged certain stories, the stories that the African-American community in particular care about may not get collected.
Greg Tate joins us now. He writes about the African-American contemporary culture scene for The Village Voice. He's also the author of, among other books, Everything But the Burden, What White People Are Taking from Black Culture. He's with us from his home in Harlem, and it's good of you to join us on Talk of the Nation.
Oh, my pleasure.
As somebody who writes about music, and we have to remember this will be a museum of African-American history and culture, what do you think the museum must have? What's essential?
Well, I'm a big advocate for regionalism when it comes to portraying the history of African-American music, which is so diverse and, I mean, took root in so many different states in such different ways. So that, you know, there's a story to be told about the way the music, black music developed in New Orleans, and a story to be told about how it develops in Memphis and Chicago, Detroit, and New York. And at the same time, I think it's important to acknowledge, you know, certainly figures who've taken a conceptual high ground with articulating what this thing called African-American music is. I think now if people like certainly Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, you know, because, I mean, I think they really expanded people's notions of how universal African-American music was and also the kind of intellectual achievement that was possible through the music itself.
As you look at a national museum, do you think that there should be a cutoff date, you know, after which, you know, you don't consider stuff that's been produced over the past 25 years or 50 years or whatever arbitrary date you might want to pick, just to make sure that you're, by the time it does get into the museum, it's, you know, had time to be appreciated properly and critically, you know, evaluated?
Well, it's an interesting question because the thing you're dealing with when you deal with African-American music is, one, a strong line of continuity from West African music to hip-hop,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so you're dealing with an ongoing story, you know, and I know that in the case of several of the Smithsonian museums, I mean, they managed to kind of recognize contemporary achievements in addition to, you know, the history that may have led to them, you know. And, that, you know, there may even be a place, say, in this museum for the development of a repertory African-American orchestra that would kind of look at the music in a 360-degree kind of way. Because you know, one of the things about the music is that it's really a vernacular history of African-American achievement and of the narrative, the African-American narrative in and of itself. You know, there's so much... There's so many ways in which you can use the music to talk about what was going on socially, economically, politically, sartorially, you know, visually, you know, in America in general, you know, through the music and through the performers and through the situations and conditions that they worked through and worked under.
Let me just bring in and ask you briefly a question. Would you include music videos and that sort of stuff?
Well, I'd hope that this would be a 21st century leaning enterprise in terms of being interactive, in terms of having like state of the art, you know, computer files in terms of documentation that people could readily access as participants in the museum experience.
Claudine Brown, that sounds exactly like one of the things you hope to achieve anyway.
That's definitely what we hope to achieve, and I think it's great that Greg is talking about music because when we talk about art and culture, a lot of people think of museums as just places for the visual arts, but we now have a couple of museums that deal with music and the music industry, and I think that media, film, and music are just as important in our community as the visual arts.
Hmm. Well, Greg Take, thanks very much for being with us.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Greg
Great
Tate.
Discussion. Glad it's going on.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Greg Tate, a staff writer for the Village Voice and author of, among other books, Midnight Lightning, Jimi Hendrix, and the Black Experience. He was with us from his home in Harlem in New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Claudine Brown is still with us. She's served as vice chairperson of the Presidential Commission for the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And let's get another caller on the line. And this is Dale. Dale's on the line with us from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon.
My question is this. Detroit has a fabulous museum of African American history, but it's struggling financially. Wouldn't the museum be better served to have the Smithsonian name and financial backing go into one of these other pre-established museums?
The Smithsonian actually has something called the Smithsonian Affiliations Program, so that museums in other cities can become members. And I don't know if the Detroit African American Museum, the Charles H. Wright Museum, is one of the affiliates. But for the planning of this museum, we had a town meeting that was hosted in Detroit at the Charles H. Wright Museum. And one of the ways that this museum sees itself being effective is to create economies among museums that have similar purposes. So, for instance, one of the reasons why museums struggle is because they usually have to create 3 to 4 exhibitions a year in order to keep their audiences interested. If this National Museum can work in conjunction with other institutions, maybe each of them can create one important exhibit a year, and those exhibits can travel to different venues for 2 or maybe 3 years. And in that way, there are economies of interest. So we are looking at ways that all of these institutions can work together, because we really need the regional institutions for collecting stories and for preserving regional history. And we believe that we need a national museum that is able to catapult those stories so that they are able to reach people throughout the nation and really throughout the world.
Dale, do you work? Well, let me ask a follow-on question to Dale's call then. The considerable amount of money that has to be raised in the private sector to match the federal funding for the creation of this national museum, do you fear that it might damage fundraising efforts by museums like the one he was talking about in Detroit?
That actually is a big issue, and it was raised by some of the other African-American institutions. One of the things, though, that we're looking at is who the big donors are on a national basis. A lot of the regional museums really depend heavily on either private foundations or local corporate donors. And then there are some, mostly corporations as well as individuals, who support larger entities. And we're hoping that we will be going after some of those donors and will not have a detrimental impact on other institutions. There have been some major capital campaigns, for instance, the one for the Underground Railroad Museum, which has not opened yet, attracted major donors. And we have not heard that it affected other African-American institutions in the region.
Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier about, obviously cultural aspects. What about oral histories? Is that going to be an element of this museum, do you believe?
Oral histories, we think, are very, very important. And again, this is the kind of material that can be on a CD-ROM or an interactive database so that individuals could gain access to them and really kind of focus in on the oral histories that they really want to see. We have been talking to a number of organizations that are already in the process of collecting oral histories.
We are talking about the creation of a National Museum of African American History and Culture here in Washington, D.C., part of the Smithsonian Institution. What history do you want to see in it? Civil rights, Reconstruction, hip-hop? Give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about what a National Museum of African American History and Culture could be when it's built here in Washington, D.C. President Bush is expected to sign a bill authorizing funding for that museum later this week. Our guest is Claudine Brown, who served as the vice chairperson of the Presidential Commission for the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And joining us now is Lonnie Bunch. He's an historian and president of the Chicago Historical Society. He joins us from his office in Chicago, and good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
It's my pleasure.
Wanted to get your thoughts on this new National Museum.
Well, I think it's very important that this nation finally have a national institution that explores and celebrates and makes accessible the rich history of African Americans. In some ways, I think that this is a story that is a wonderful mirror to understand not just what it means to be a black American, what it means to be an American.
Now, earlier in your career, you helped establish the California African American Museum in Los Angeles, and you now run a museum there in Chicago. Any advice for the people preparing to run this new one in Washington?
I think that it's really important, especially if you're creating an African American museum, to find a right tension, a tension between being a place that celebrates African American history, that allows African Americans to see themselves and to feel ownership, but to also be an institution that really uses African-American history to understand what it means to be an American. So it has a broad appeal.
I understand you also helped the South African government put together a museum about apartheid.
One of the things that's been interesting to me is how governments use history as a means to help for healing and reconciliation. And in South Africa, there's a real desire to help get beyond apartheid. And so one of the things they did was to use history as a way for people to understand the past and to use that as a means to heal.
I wanted to bring Claudine Brown back into the discussion and ask if at any point there was consideration of, there's a Holocaust museum near the mall in Washington, D.C., of a museum that would have been about slavery and modeled perhaps on the Holocaust Museum.
There were suggestions that this museum should be that, and when we did town meetings around the country, I would say that the experience of the forced migration was something that citizens across the country want desperately. So that will be, that has to be a part of what this museum interprets. However, that is not the only story that African Americans wanted to tell. It was one of the important ones, but they really believe that in the National Museum, it had to tell stories that went beyond that experience.
Lonnie Bunch, what do you want to see in this museum?
Well, I think that Claudine's notion is absolutely right. I think that on the one hand, this institution can talk about things like slavery and the era of Jim Crow in a way that all people will understand. But I think it also has to talk about the creativity of African Americans. It has to talk about, in essence, the inherent optimism that really helps African Americans to, you know, move forward even in difficult times. I think in a way it really needs to find the tension between stories of difficulty and stories of triumph.
Let's get another caller involved, and Winston joins us on the line from Taylor, Michigan.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm glad there's a discussion on this. I'm a registered nurse, and I'd like to offer or say Benjamin Carson for neuroscience and what advances he's contributed to the museum as far as healthcare.
And perhaps other African-American inventors?
Correct, because I saw a book at one of my campuses that was really thick and it had a lot of blacks in it that did a lot of contributing, and I'd like to have something like that put in there where people can actually see, you know, with their own eyes versus just seeing on TV. You can actually hold it and it's tangible.
Claudine Brown, is that something you may take to heart?
When we worked on the program plan for the museum, we actually looked at history of blacks in many different professions. And so we are interested in the contributions of African Americans in the sciences, in business, in commerce, in labor. So that will be covered. The important thing to note, though, that museums are supposed to be around in perpetuity. So they may not be able to tell every story the first time out, and the research may not be good in terms of someone having done in-depth scholarly research. But the goal of the museum is to tell all of those stories over time.
Well, that's all I'm looking for, is something that's going to showcase us as far as our contributing ability and what we've given to this world, not necessarily just this nation.
Winston, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
An email question from Maria Danielson in Oak Bluffs, Massachusetts. Will the museum offer resources for genealogical research? Will there be a possibility to loan family papers to the museum?
Well, that I can't say for sure. There have been members of the African-American Genealogy Association who've attended, again, the town meetings that we've had, and they have been willing to be partners and collaborators. A lot will be determined once curators are brought aboard and the initial programs of the museum are established. We certainly believe that that is important, and if we can facilitate that, we will do that. But I think that some of the work of the museum will have to be done through partnerships with existing organizations.
Lonnie Bunch, before we let you go, I did want to ask whether you fear, as somebody who runs a Chicago Historical Society now, that funding for other museums might be impacted by fundraising for this museum.
Well, I think that it is a very difficult time economically, and clearly institutions like this will have an impact on funding. But the truth of the matter is, a good institution that really helps people understand how important history is, African-American history, will stimulate interest in that subject and will help all of us do our fundraising more effectively. So I am very pleased that this is an institution that will join the cultural landscape.
Lonnie Bunch, thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Lonnie Bunch, president of the Chicago Historical Society. He joined us from his office in Chicago, Illinois. And here's an email we got from Stacy Heckel. I'm a white woman with two sons. Last February, I went downtown in order to visit the Smithsonian, where I erroneously concluded that there would be some type of exhibition about civil rights or something on an African-American experience. There was nothing. I was shocked. I went to American History and was told that the only exhibit was the Woolworth counter down a hallway. I could drive to Anacostia, they told me, or I could go to Alabama, to the King Museum. There was no temporary exhibit. There was nothing available on the mall. All I found was a tiny book in one gift shop which highlighted Martin Luther King. I want my children to understand our history, she writes. The battle for understanding and tolerance is not over. I'm embarrassed that our National Mall has nothing even remotely like this. It's a huge piece missing. It's a huge travesty. And this, I assume, Claudine Brown, is what you hope to address.
Actually, the question that she poses is the question that was posed when I went to work at the Smithsonian in 1990, and the issue was there was no continuous African-American presence on the mall. And what happens is that other museums may do temporary exhibitions, but those exhibitions come and they go. And so people who come because they believe they can learn more about the African-American experience and contributions of African-Americans to this nation's capital really are facing a hit-or-miss experience. And what we think should happen is that they should never come to Washington, D.C., to the National Mall, and not learn about African-Americans' contributions to this great nation.
Claudine Brown, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Claudine Brown is director of the Arts and Culture Program at the Nathan Cummings Foundation in New York. She served as vice chairperson of the Presidential Commission for the National Museum of African American History and Culture. She joined us from her office in New York. There is still a ways to go before such a museum is created. As we mentioned, there is considerable fundraising to be done. The bill that will establish this, that President Bush is expected to sign later this week, will establish federal funding for this, but that has to be matched by private funding. And still unresolved is the ongoing controversy of where this museum will be located, on the mall itself or somewhere nearby. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.